Welcome to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Right now our guest is John Wohlstetter. We had him on recently. He's a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute, and he is a great commentator on problems in the Middle East. And today we're going to be talking about how do we deal with the crisis that is ISIS. John, welcome back to the program.
Jerry, always a pleasure to be with you.
Sure. So tell us about how should we be dealing with ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria?
Well, what we need to do is we need to defeat ISIS. To do this, we have to form a coalition of Sunni nations that are willing to fight and defeat ISIS. And right now, ISIS is allied with Iran in a temporary marriage of convenience, but we have to regard them both as enemies.
Wait. Can I stop you right there? This is really important to underscore. Okay, ISIS is Sunni, and by the way, if you take Islam and you divide it into this two major groups, the Sunnis, which are about 85% of the Muslims around the world, and then there are the Shiites, which are about 15% of the world, and the Shiites and the Sunnis do not get along, but you're saying that ISIS and the Iranians, who are Shiites, are getting along, correct?
Well, yeah, look, the Iranians have also helped the Palestinians at times. This idea that Sunni and Shia never cooperate is not true. They're not in love with one another. But what we need to do to defeat ISIS, we first of all have to up our own ante in the game. Flying an average of less than 10 air missions a night is not going to do it when we're capable of sustaining well over 1,000, even 1,500 sorties a night. We wouldn't have to have necessarily that much. But we're not going to get the locals to do more if we don't do more. I mean, we would not even give King Abdullah of Jordan, when he was here a month ago, unarmed reconnaissance drones after saying we'll give them all the support they need. And they have the 12 F-16s to conduct airstrikes with. But to get a larger commitment, we have to put some troops on the ground. We don't have to send the 82nd Airborne, but we have to have special ops people down there, advisors, trainers, and we have to supply them with enough equipment. And the most important thing is, if we start beating them on the battlefield, they're going to find it very hard to get new recruits. And a lot of recruits who recently joined will probably melt away.
Yeah.
This is the old Bin Laden observation, that people prefer a strong horse to a weak horse. Everyone likes to jump on the bandwagon of a winner.
Yeah.
But if you're getting their tails kicked, not as many people are going to come out. If a recruiter goes into a madrasa and says, hey, gang, or in a cafe somewhere, we're kicking the tail out of the Americans. You want to join it? We have them on the run. He's going to get more people that have said, hey, listen, the Americans really inflicted great damage on us last night. We lost a quarter of our force. You want to come on out and help us? They might decide to go to the movies.
Okay, great, great point. I like that. Okay, the Islamic State, by the way, it goes by, there's three different names. There's Islamic State, that's just the general one. Then there's the ISIS, it's all the same group, by the way, and then ISIL. Can you explain the phrase ISIL, which is what the President Obama likes to use?
Well, the L is the Levant.
Right.
And that includes parts of Syria and Lebanon. Frankly, I've been using ISIS because Islamic State might confuse it with other Islamic states.
Oh.
And ISIS is simpler. It was around before ISIL. ISIL has never really caught on with most people who comment on it.
Okay.
So the administration can be out of line on that as much as anything else. well, really, I mean, it's...
Well, they are out of line with a lot of this stuff, yeah.
Yeah. So I think ISIS is a better one. The only danger there, but it's not considering the state of our education, is that ISIS was the guard, the wife of Osiris in Egyptian, in the Egyptian pantheon.
Right, yeah.
I don't think, however, there are too many people who are making that appraisal.
All right, now, if we talk about the country of Syria, and I'm just going to ask you to guesstimate, if you have, let's say, 100% of the territory of Syria, what percentage approximately would be have any kind of control by ISIS?
I haven't seen a recent number, Jerry. These things are changing constantly.
They change, okay.
But what you have is a fragmented state, and it's quite possible that Israel is Israel. That Syria will not be a united country or even Iraq. And frankly, it reminds me of what Charles de Gaulle, the great post-war French leader, said about Germany when there were two Germanys after the war. He said, in the Second World War, that he, de Gaulle, loved Germany so much he always hoped there were at least two of them.
Hmm.
Now, in the fullness of time, we have a unified Germany we all accept.
Right.
But I don't think, frankly, that we would benefit from having unified terror-sponsoring states.
Yes, no, I agree. But as far as Syria is concerned, I remember I saw some commentator on the news. He looked like he was British or whatever, and he was saying we have to keep our eyes on the real enemy here, and the real enemy is Assad. And he was blaming the leader of Syria as if he is the reason that ISIS exists. Is that accurate? That doesn't strike me as true, but I'm curious.
Our failure to get with what was a peaceful protest, for 6 months Syrians turned out unarmed in the streets, and they were fired on periodically by the Syrian security forces before things became violent.
Which would be Assad's fault, okay.
Yeah, and then at that time, there was no Al-Qaeda, ISIS, or any other kind of thing, whatever you want to call them, Khorasan and all the other names. There was no such presence there. They came in because we left a vacuum, and then they were encouraged to pour more resources in when President Obama walked away from the red line that he himself...
Right.
Had now denies he drew, which everybody else in the world knows he drew,
mm-hmm.
and he's fooling no one but himself and those who are his acolytes. So that made things much worse, and he made a de facto deal with Russia, which ensured Assad's survival, unless somebody's lucky enough to knock him off. And then he pulls out of Iraq, which left the airspace free for Iran to fly over and easily resupply its clients in this conflict. So it has been a disaster of very large proportion that promises to become a catastrophe if we're not careful.